It's time for Making Sense with Steve Laser.
Y'all ready for this?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Making Sense with Steve Laser, the show that breaks down the top issues in the last week in politics, strips out all the nonsense, and provides you the best analysis in political media. This week, we have more Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare good news. Then we talk about the Operation American Spring Rally that was held this weekend that was supposed to have 10 to 30 million people show up in Washington, D.C., and camp out there until President Obama resigned. Yeah, like that was going to happen. Then we have an update on the Chris Christie bridge scandal. We have new evidence that has come up that you'll want to hear. If we have time, I will again discuss Benghazi. I had another appearance on Fox News where I had a debate with my good friend Judge Jeanine Pirro on Benghazi. At the end, we'll have our trademark weekly Hall of Fame and shame for those politicians and prominent individuals who made great sense or shameful nonsense, respectively. If you want to write to me and give me your opinion of any topic I cover, write to makingsenseletters@yahoo.com, and I may just read your opinion on the air. Again, that's makingsenseletters@yahoo.com. My feature update on more Obamacare good news starts now. And another Obamacare myth bites the dust. According to analysis by PricewaterhouseCoopers Health Research Institute, by the way, I used to work for PricewaterhouseCoopers in the late 1990s, but health insurance premiums on the Affordable Care Act's exchange markets are comparable, as a matter of fact, at the highest level, they're lower than the employer-based market. So, this is, again, just another one of those Republican talking points that has now been busted. We had death panels, people in the health insurance industry and in the government supposedly were going to be judging whether people should get care and whether they should live or die. Of course, that's not true. We're talking about killing grandma. That's sort of an extension of the whole death panel idea that people were going to decide that once you got past a certain age, it didn't make sense to care for you because it was too expensive to care for you. Of course, that's not true. At one point, Republicans were saying that the Affordable Care Act was going to be giving health care to undocumented immigrants. Of course, as we know now, that's not true. Well, actually, we knew it back then, but Republicans took a long time coming around to that one. Then they were saying no one was going to sign up. Everybody hated it. Young people in particular won't sign up. Well, we've got about 18 million people signed up. If you count the exchanges, if you count kids being able to stay on their parents until age 27, if you count Medicaid expansion, somewhere around 18 million have signed up. So we've had a lot of these crazy things put out there by Republicans. All of them turned out to be not true. No wonder that the favorability rating for the Affordable Care Act is still a little bit lower than we would like. It's probably around, depending upon which poll that you look at, within 5 or 10% of the unfavorable rating. So probably both are somewhere in the 40s, the favorable and unfavorable ratings. But the reason why it's like that is because so much of the public has been fed all of this untrue information about the Affordable Care Act, a lot of which is still believed by some folks out there. But if you recall, when the numbers started coming out as far as how much health care premiums were going to cost, the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank, came out with all this information that it was going to be more expensive to buy health insurance through the exchanges than it would have been on the open market. Well, it's not true. As a matter of fact, it's cheaper to get the top-of-the-line Affordable Care Act plan on average than it is to for an employer health care plan that provides less coverage. Now, let me take you through this because there are a few things that have to be explained. For one thing, as we all know now, the Affordable Care Act has what's called these metal levels. Metal, M-E-T-A-L, metal levels. There's bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. And what those mean is The bronze plans, according to the actuarial value, pay about 60% of healthcare costs. Silver plans pay about 70% of overall healthcare costs. Gold pays 80%, platinum pays 90%. That includes costs such as deductibles and other kinds of cost sharings, right? If you buy a platinum plan on the exchange, you're going to pay only 10% or so of actual healthcare costs assessed. The plan is going to pay 90%. Now, on average, employer-sponsored healthcare plans pay about 85% of healthcare costs. So that's a little bit less than what an Affordable Care Act platinum plan costs. And it turns out the average employer plan costs about $6,119 a year for a premium for a single person of about 27 years of age, whereas a platinum plan on the exchange, under the Affordable Care Act Obamacare exchange, costs about 4% less, $6,058. So we can see, and again, this was PricewaterhouseCoopers. They're one of the big four accounting firms in the United States. These big four firms are the ones who audit all public companies, make sure that their books are right, so their shareholders can have some sort of confidence, you know, that the information that they're getting from their the financials and the accounting from these firms is correct. PricewaterhouseCoopers has a number of different groups that do special work outside of typical accounting. This was their health research institute that takes a look at all kinds of healthcare issues. And they did this analysis and found that this was the case. So this is not a political organization. Sometimes PwC comes out with things that benefit Democrats. Sometimes their analysis benefits Republicans, but we see here that yet another of these Republican anti-Obamacare talking points turns out just not to be true. Now, some of you are listening to this, and you're probably wondering, what about those news stories about people whose premiums had shot way up? Well, an article in Business Insider and on Yahoo Finance by Laura Friedman notes that in the PricewaterhouseCoopers report, they talked to that. And they said that those were often people whose Affordable Care Act insurance, whose pre-Affordable Care Act insurance, in other words, the insurance that this individual person before the Affordable Care Act had gone out and bought on the open market, did not meet even the most basic standards set forth by the law. In other words, remember the 50, 60, 70, 80, 90% marks that I talked about earlier. Some of the sticker shock noted about enrollees in the new exchanges is due to more comprehensive insurance coverage in the exchange plans, the PricewaterhouseCoopers analysis notes, citing research in health affairs. More than half the people in the individual market, now this is amazing, so this is before the Affordable Care Act existed, more than half the people in the individual market had coverage below the bronze level of 60%, the lowest level in the exchanges. So less than 60% of any healthcare costs that you incurred, if you bought a policy on the individual market, on average, less than 60% of your costs would be covered by your plan. So that means that people most likely to see their rates going way up were people whose insurance would not actually have helped them much when they needed it the most. Now, most of this stuff, folks, I knew about or guessed correctly about from the very beginning, and that's why I was confident enough when I've had debates with Republicans on the Affordable Care Act to say, you know what, guys, when this is all said and done, people are going to like the Affordable Care Act. They're going to give President Obama credit for doing it. They're going to give Democrats the credit for doing it. And Republicans are going to look bad for having done nothing but sat on the sidelines and sniped at them the entire time that they were trying to get it done. And my prediction is coming true. I joked about it on my Facebook page. I said, you all can call me Nostradamus now because my prediction is coming true. And Republicans have no idea what they're going to run on for this 2014 election. The polls right now are about neck and neck. Some people still think the Republicans are ahead. They're in bad shape, folks, because they have nothing to run on. And it couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of folks. We'll be right back.
Do you know our sense of smell is the most important after our sense of sight? It's the most powerful as well, and it triggers memories and emotions, and is the most compelling aspect to make you feel wonderful. At scentrprises.com, that's scenterprises.com, we take you on a fragrance journey to learn about the magic and mystery of scent to create your very own custom perfume. We have an exquisite range of perfume blends which spans the entire fragrance palette, from sparkling citrus notes to light, fresh and clean herbals and marine notes, florals that everyone will love, such as fresh, gentle, sexy and heady florientals. And if you prefer sophisticated fragrances, our blends of spicy, amber, woodsy, musky, mossy and luscious gourmand vanilla notes are warm, sensual and combine beautifully with all the blends. So why wear what everyone else wears when you can create your very own custom perfume? Be different. Contact Sue at scentrprises.com. Scentrprises, our business makes you sensational.
Zero Juliet uploaded.
This week, we have a continuation of the discussion of whether or not there should be investigations, or I should say, an eighth investigation into what happened at the U.S. consulate in Benghazi. Now, why do I say eight? Well, it depends on how you count committee hearings, right? The way I count it, it seems like there have been eight investigations, and I can name most of them. We've had investigations in the House Intelligence Committee, in the House Armed Services Committee, and the House Government Reform Committees. Those are chaired by Representatives Rogers, Buck McKeon, and Daryl Issa, respectively. We've also had investigations in the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, the Senate Homeland Security Committee, and the Governmental Affairs Committee. The FBI has also conducted an investigation. So, at this point, Benghazi, the attacks on our consulate there and the deaths of the four Americans, including our ambassador, is already one of the most investigated issues in American history. Think about that. And that's before this select committee even forms to investigate it an eighth time. Now, the other thing that I would point out, if you listened to the different names of the committees that have already investigated this in the House and the Senate, what you have to understand is not only has this thing been completely investigated, but it's been completely investigated from several different angles and specialties. House Intelligence Committee investigated all of the intelligence failures leading up to Benghazi, whether or not the attacks could have been prevented. Armed Services Committee, chaired by Buck McKeon, specifically looked into when the attacks started, could our troops have been saved? Could we have done anything? So we've had these investigations, we've had these investigations coming from different angles at it. No wrongdoing has been found. In fact, you know, the House is controlled by the Republicans. That means all of the committees in the House are chaired by Republicans. And the Republicans who chair the Intelligence, Armed Services, and Government Reform Committees, Representatives Rogers, Buck McKeon, and Daryl Issa, all opposed the formation of this new select committee on Benghazi. Why? Why would they do that when it seems like such a big Republican priority to continue to investigate Benghazi? Because they know better. Because they have spent their own times investigating this thoroughly, and they know that there is no wrongdoing there. Now, I went on Fox News Sunday night on my friend, Saturday night, excuse me, on my friend Judge Jeanine Pirro's show. It was my second time in 8 days going on Fox News and discussing the Benghazi issue. And she asked me a question that I actually found very interesting. I'm glad she asked it and gave me an opportunity to answer it. She asked me why Democrats are so afraid of a new Benghazi hearing. And I told her, Judge, I'm not afraid. We Democrats are not afraid of these hearings. I think you're looking at this the wrong way. The way I wish I would have responded, I gave a good response. I said that I'll get to my response in a second. Imagine this, folks. Imagine that at work you have a task that you were assigned that took several months to do, was very expensive and very tedious. When you got done, you completed it, you found out or accomplished whatever it was that needed to be accomplished, and then somebody else in your firm, maybe not your direct boss, maybe that person's boss, came to you and said, "We need you to do it again." So you did. Another month and a half, another whatever money that needed to be spent out of your group's budget was spent. You got finished. You did a good job again. And then you were told to do it a third time. Now, I am guessing that if not by the end of the first time when you were asked to do it a second time, certainly by the end of the second time when you were asked to do it a third time, you would start raising some objections, right? It's not fun to do the same thing over and over again. It's not fun to put somebody through that. That's what we Democrats are upset about. I mean, we elect people in Congress to do a whole bunch of things. They have spent way too much time doing this. The State Department, who's the focus of these investigations, has spent a lot of time responding to all of these things. They're frustrated and exasperated. Everybody has been interviewed 3, 4, 5 times, asked the same question that many times. We spent a tremendous amount of money doing it. We're going to spend another tremendous amount of money on this new select committee. That's what's at issue here. Not that we Democrats are afraid. Matter of fact, the answer that I gave to Judge, I'll get back to that. The answer that I gave to the judge is that as a pundit, as a Democratic pundit who has their own radio show, from that perspective, I'm not upset at this new hearing. I'm upset at it as an American, as somebody who doesn't want my tax dollars going to it, as somebody who recognizes it's a waste of time. But as a Democratic pundit, I love these new hearings, folks. Because I'm going to get to point out, and I hope all of my fellow Democratic pundits, and I hope every elected Democrat in Congress, in the Senate, I hope we all have our eye on the fact that everything that the Republicans are going to do in the Select Committee has been done before, and it's a waste of time. So every question asked, we should go back to prior transcripts where that same witness was asked the same thing before and gave the same answer. We should be all over that. I'm going to be all over it as much as I can. I mean, obviously, there's reams of testimony that's been given. I don't necessarily personally have the resources to go over all of that, but I hope somebody in the DNC or somebody in the Democratic Party is doing it, because this could be a bonanza for the Democratic Party. The fact that the Republicans are doing this kind of a wasteful thing in the run-up to 2014 is a big deal. That's another reason why these Republicans that I mentioned earlier who had these committees don't want another investigation. They don't want another select committee. Daryl Issa, folks. Daryl Issa wants to investigate if somebody drops a glass in the White House and it breaks. He wants to investigate the waste of that glass. If Daryl Issa doesn't want to investigate the White House for something, doesn't want to investigate the president for something, that means something, okay? I mean, this is a guy who calls himself the investigator-in-chief in private. He wants to be investigating the White House. He doesn't want to investigate this anymore. So that is my full answer to the question, a good question, actually, very good question that Judge Jeanine Pirro asked me on her show Saturday night. So we're going to be watching. We Democrats are going to be watching. We're going to show the people of this country which party is really serious about the issues facing this country, which party is really serious about not wasting money, not wasting taxpayer money. And this is, you know, going to be seen as a mistake. You know what? John Boehner, he didn't want to do this investigation either. I don't think John Boehner can actually ever play poker again. And that might sound like a strange comment. I'll explain. You could see it in his face when we were dealing with the government shutdown this past fall that he didn't want to do that. He doesn't want this new select committee on Benghazi. You can see that in his face. And I think anybody playing poker against him would just be able to view the videos of him talking about those two issues versus some of the other things that he actually wants to do, and you can pretty much tell the different emotions on his face by the way he handled those different issues. He doesn't want to be doing this. Mitch McConnell doesn't really want to be doing this. None of the leaders in the Republican Party want to do this. They're stuck, you know. They're stuck because they've tried to make it out as this bad thing that the administration has done. They've ginned up their base. Whenever I go on Fox News, I get dozens of hate tweets saying, how could I be so stupid, and all this other stuff. They've convinced their base that something is there. They'd love to be able to back away from it now, but they can't. So they're stuck. That's another aspect of this. The base of the Republican Party, especially the Tea Party base, they think that something is there because they've been told that over and over again. So the leadership of the Republican Party is stuck because they've lied to their base. That's another thing that we shouldn't lose sight of here in this whole thing. Now, before I move on to something else, there's one thing that I want to point out. A lot has been made of what the president said the very next day after the attacks. You know, he talked about no acts of terror are going to... Actually, I have the exact quote here someplace. And, of course, when I want to find it on the air, I'm not going to be able to. But this is the whole thing that was in the second debate where he mentioned no acts of terror. Whenever I've mentioned this on TV, Republicans have said, no, he wasn't saying that regarding Benghazi. He didn't call Benghazi acts of terror. The press conference that he gave was on Benghazi. He mentioned Benghazi like 10 to 15 times in the three prior paragraphs before he said that. He also mentioned 9/11, which is why he pluralized what he said, no acts of terror. Now, the White House, I wasn't going to go into this, but you know what, I'm going to. The administration, in the week or two after Benghazi, clearly between the administration, the State Department, the Central Intelligence Agency who was investigating, the FBI who was investigating on the ground in Benghazi, and inside those organizations themselves, there was clearly disagreement on what exactly had happened and who did it. September 15th, 4 days after the attacks, talking points prepared by the CIA said, the currently available information suggests that the demonstrations in Benghazi were spontaneously inspired by the protests at the U.S. Embassy in Cairo and evolved into a direct assault against the U.S. consulate and subsequently its annex. There are indications that extremists participated in the violent demonstrations. Folks, by 2.5 weeks or so after the attacks, the administration had settled on the idea that it was a terrorist attack. Everybody was finally on the same page. There was confusion before. That's understandable. There was this anti-Muslim video that had caused protests to happen in 3 or 4 other countries at the same time that the attacks happened in Benghazi. Now, why Republicans have tried to make the various messages coming out of the White House in those 1 or 2 weeks right after the attacks, why they've tried to make that into such a big deal, I have no idea. It's completely understandable. Libya, the entire country was a mess. They had had a coup not too much beforehand. It was very difficult to figure out exactly what was going on there. Understandable that there was a little bit of confusion. 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks is not a lot of time when you consider in those circumstances an investigation had to try to figure out what happened. That's totally understandable and reasonable to me. But we're going to see. We're going to see what happens with this investigation. It's going to be fun from a pundit standpoint, very annoying from an American citizen standpoint. And I will keep you guys informed. We'll be right back. We don't get fooled again. No. What's the biggest fallacy about diamonds? More facets are better and will create more fire. Doesn't that make sense? Nothing could be farther from the truth. In fact, larger facets create more fire. The new Blaze Cut is a unique square diamond with a fabulous display of colors never before seen emanating from a diamond. In fact, the Blaze Diamond has 9 times the fire of any other round diamond of the same size. It took a genius to invent the Blaze Diamond, and an amazing artist to highlight the beauty
in fine jewelry. View Blaze Diamond Jewelry by Bez Ambar on Badler.com, B-A-D-L-E-R.com, or search Blaze Diamond on YouTube to see remarkable videos. Experience this new innovation by coming to Maurice Badler Fine Jewelry in New York City, 485 Park Avenue between 58th and 59th Streets. Visit Badler.com for more information or call 800-M-BADLER. That's 800-M-B-A-D-L-E-R.
Welcome back, folks. One of the funnier things to happen in politics in the last couple of months, if not couple of years, this past weekend was the planned Operation American Spring protests. Now, if you haven't heard of them, don't feel bad. Most people hadn't heard of them. The goal of the American Spring protest, well, let me just say that they claimed that 10 to 30 million people would show up in Washington, D.C. The organizers guaranteed, that's what they said, they guaranteed 10 million people would show up at least. They said 10 to 30. And when it was all said and done, a few dozen to a few hundred pathetic souls showed up. They're basically the far right of the Tea Party crowd. So the Tea Party itself is already the far right of the Republican Party. Well, the far right of the far right are the ones who showed up, holding up signs that are typical of what you would expect from that crowd. The webcams, they did have webcams in real time showing the protests, and you could see that there was never really more than 40 to 80 people there at any one time. When word came that they had missed the goal of 10 million people, a minimum of 10 million people, by about 999,900 people, the hashtag American Spring Excuses began trending on Twitter, and I think it's probably still trending on Twitter. I don't know if it will be by the time the show broadcasts, but here are a couple of the funnier hashtag American Spring Excuses tweets. Drone hustling, shape-shifting Kenyan socialist dictators don't scare me, but that clammy drizzle was too much. That's from John Sheehan. Dystopia Now tweets, put the hood on backwards, ran into a tree which was put there by liberal fascist socialist dictators. Harold Itzkowitz tweeted, we changed plans when we heard that the image of Jesus appeared on an English muffin at a dinner in Toledo. Average Chirps tweeted, as they drove toward downtown, the sign read, Washington left, so they went home. Keith Breckus tweeted, somebody told me that black people live in D.C., and I got scared. So you can kind of get the idea. I was going to make a sign last Sunday, but Hobby Lobby was closed. That was from Maddie Ice. Blue DuPage tweeted, already had tickets to Monster Truck Rally. So obviously folks on Twitter having a really fun time with this. A lot of progressive and liberal-leaning news media had a fun time with this. But really, the goal, folks, just so you know, the goal was to get all these millions of people in Washington, D.C. and quote, this is a quote, force top American leaders, including President Obama, to resign. Now, the main website for the protest was called misguidedchildren.com, and I actually think that sums everything up and speaks volumes about what this was all about. One of the other interesting things about this is RT, which formerly was called Russia Today, the Russian state media service in English that has a channel on Time Warner and various other cable networks in the United States. They showed a photo. So they had an article on the protest. They were hyping it up. And in order to make it seem like it was better attended than it was, they showed a photo from a Tea Party rally of June of 2013 where there were many thousands of people there in D.C. for a rally, to make it seem like this Operation American Spring was better attended, which, folks, if you need any any reasons why I've decided to no longer do Russian media, including RT, I think that is a pretty good example of why I've decided not to do that anymore. We're running out of time, but I want to talk about one other important piece of news that happened this weekend. Chris Christie and Bridgegate. You know, every couple of weeks, another piece of information comes out that suggests that the governor hasn't exactly been truthful with us. You know, the last really big piece of information was the self-investigation where his own lawyers looked into the whole thing and then pronounced him basically not guilty. And I did a little segment here on the show showing how ridiculous that all was. But now, an important thing has come out from the lawyers for Bill Stepien. Stepien was Christie's former campaign manager. And it suggests, for the first time, a bit of a cover-up. On December 13th, the Governor Christie went before the press and said that no one on his senior staff had prior knowledge of the plan to close access to the lanes to the George Washington Bridge in September. But Mr. Stepien's attorney, Kevin Marino, says that on December 12th, the very day before, that Stepien had gone to Governor Christie and said, yes, I did have prior knowledge, and what had happened was that former Port Authority of New York and New Jersey executive David Wildstein had come to Mr. Stepien with the idea to close the bridge to punish the mayor of Fort Lee, to which Mr. Stepien responded that Mr. Wildstein would have to run the idea by normal channels in Trenton, meaning the governor's office. So we don't know what Mr. Wildstein did after that, but that is actually very important to find out. So that's probably the next thing that people are going to be asking Mr. Wildstein. So right off the bat, it seems that on December 13th, Chris Christie lied to the press when he told that no one on his senior staff, to his knowledge, had prior knowledge of the plan to close access to the lanes on the George Washington Bridge. We're going to keep a close eye on this story, but we'll be right back.
Do you know our sense of smell is the most important after our sense of sight? It's the most powerful as well, and it triggers memories and emotions and is the most compelling aspect to make you feel wonderful. At scentaprises.com, that's scenterprises.com, we take you on a fragrance journey to learn about the magic and mystery of scent to create your very own custom perfume. We have an exquisite range of perfume blends which spans the entire fragrance palette, from sparkling citrus notes to light, fresh, and clean herbals and marine notes, florals that everyone will love, such as fresh, gentle, sexy, and heady florientals. And if you prefer sophisticated fragrances, our blends of spicy, amber, woodsy, musky, mossy, and luscious gourmand vanilla notes are warm, sensual, and combine beautifully with all the blends. So why wear what everyone else wears when you can create your very own custom perfume? Be different. Contact Sue at scentaprises.com. Scentaprises, our business makes you sensational.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide. No escape from reality.
And now it's time for our weekly Hall of Fame and Shame for those politicians and prominent individuals who made great sense or shameful nonsense, respectively. First, our Hall of Fame for making sense. Winning the Hall of Fame this week for making great sense is conservative CNBC host Brian Sullivan. Brian Sullivan is co-anchor of Street Signs, a show about the financial markets. Before CNBC, he was at Bloomberg Network for 12 years and the Fox Business Network for 3 years. Now, I mention his bio because I actually appeared with him at least twice while he was at Fox Business, both times, if I'm not mistaken, when he was substituting for Neil Cavuto on Your World. Now, we had different opinions about things, but I also found him to be a nice and reasonable guy. Now, Mr. Sullivan was on Morning Joe last week when asked or participating in a discussion about the Benghazi investigation, had this to say.
Can we just stop saying the Republican Party? As somebody that grew up in a conservative household, I don't recognize the Republican Party of even my youth. I don't like what I see. I don't like the far right. I don't like the extremism. Right? They've pushed me away. As somebody who is pretty much not religious, right? Pro same-sex marriage, pro legalization of marijuana for the most part, okay? What party is this? What party am I supposed to be in? When I'm a fiscal conservative who believes that small government can often be better, there are times for larger government. So we keep saying the Republican Party, and I love you guys, and I love this show, and I come on all the time, but I don't know who the Republican Party is anymore. I don't know if the Republican Party knows who the Republican, because it's not a party, Amen. Unfortunately, Republicans, that I can get on board with, because I don't like the small-minded attitude, a lot of the far right-wing stuff that comes out. I should go
home
now.
Come on, Dad.
I think we can gather there that Mr. Sullivan is embarrassed by the current leadership of the Republican parties calling for an eighth Benghazi investigation. And as you can probably guess by the things that I've said on this show and on Fox News, I don't blame him. I mean, to anybody but the far-right crazies, an eighth investigation is ridiculous. It makes Republicans look completely ridiculous. I mean, for comparison, did we ever get one full investigation into why the Bush administration went to war in Iraq 12 days after UN weapons inspectors said there were no WMD in the country, after several months of on-site inspections where they got to look at every site that they wanted to see? I mean, that to me warrants at least one more investigation if we ever got one in the first place. Reasonable Republicans out there, like Brian Sullivan, this is the time to speak out against the waste of time and money that is about to happen in this Benghazi Select Committee. I'm already going to tell you, I said earlier, that what it's going to find is absolutely nothing new. And people like me, Democratic politicians, Democratic pundits, we're going to be all over that every day and every week. Everything that the Republicans talk about, every question that they ask a witness, we're going to be talking about how that has all been done before. And we're going to be talking about how Republicans are not interested in the real issues facing this country. They're only interested in partisan witch hunts. That's been the story of the Republican contribution during the Barack Obama presidency. It's been the contribution so far, and it looks like that's going to be the Republican contribution for the entire 8 years of his presidency. So, congratulations to CNBC host Brian Williams for winning our Hall of Fame this week for making great sense. Now we have our Hall of Shame this week for those politicians and prominent individuals who made shameful nonsense.
All aboard!
In third place this week in our Hall of Shame, we have former Speaker of the House and CNN host, Newt Gingrich. Folks on the political right, well, they don't do so well with equality and diversity issues, right? I mean, we know that. This is not news to anybody. In terms of not getting it on LGBT equality, Newt Gingrich was discussing the reaction of retired NFL player Derek Ward to the same-sex kiss between Michael Sam and his partner on ESPN the other day.
But take the case of Derek Ward, a retired Super Bowl champion. He's now getting death threats because of the following tweet. He tweeted, "I'm sorry, but that Michael Sam is no bueno for doing that on national TV. I'm fine with it being a new day and age, but for him to do that on national TV is disgusting, gay or not. Man, you got little kids looking at the draft. I can't believe ESPN even allowed that to happen." Now, doesn't it worry you that he apparently is getting death threats for
his
tweet?
This is about...
Let me go specifically, because I think you guys talk about how you want to be inclusive. Except, of course, if somebody tweets this, then having a death threat, or let's send them off to sensitivity training. I mean, it strikes me that's repression That's not inclusive.
Is it repression to try to teach them to be understanding and open to other people? Maybe, especially when you talk about people they've not been exposed
shouldn't
to.
Shouldn't you also be teaching people who are gay to be open and understanding of people who are gay?
Now, this is such a ridiculous thing to suggest. And if you notice, it only gets said about people not in favor of LGBT equality. You don't hear it said. You don't hear this excuse or similar thing said about people who dislike or discriminate against other groups, right? What do I mean? Well, look, would Gingrich and others who have used similar lines like he did, would they tell African Americans that they have to do better at tolerating the KKK? Would Gingrich and others who have used similar lines like he just did tell Jews that we have to do better at tolerating neo-Nazis? No! That's ridiculous. Anybody who said that would probably be drummed out of media and politics. They'd probably never be able to get a job again. It's ridiculous. And I hope you can all see that when I put it that way. No. You don't tell the minority group being discriminated against and denied their equality that they have to tolerate people discriminating against them. That's wrong. And depending upon how that discrimination manifests itself, it might be illegal to do that. You can't tell, for instance, somebody in the workplace that they have to tolerate somebody discriminating against them. That's not legal. People who hate and discriminate against other people, they're the ones who need to change and to learn tolerance. If Michael Sam had planted a big old tongue kiss on a hot woman on national television in reaction to being drafted, Derek Ward would have had nothing to say. He wouldn't have tweeted or said anything. We all know that. The fact that he did in response to a same-sex kiss is intolerance and discrimination. He's the one who needs to change. Not folks who are LGBT and not their allies like me. Republican former House Speaker and CNN host Newt Gingrich is third this week in our Hall of Shame for Worst Nonsense of the Week. In second place for even worse nonsense this week, we have former Bush administration senior advisor and deputy chief of staff, Karl Rove. Page6.com and other media reported that Republican strategist Karl Rove stunned a conference when he suggested that Hillary Clinton may have brain damage. On stage with Robert Gibbs and CBS correspondent and Spies Against Armageddon co-author Dan Raviv, Rove said if Clinton runs for president, voters must be told what happened when she suffered a fall in December 2012. The official diagnosis was a blood clot, Rove told the conference near L.A. on Thursday. 30 days in the hospital, and when she reappears, she's wearing glasses that are only for people who have traumatic brain injury. We need to know what's up with that. Rove repeated the claim a couple of different ways several times to the audience. And a few days later, on an appearance on Fox News America's News headquarters with host Bill Hemmer, Rove tried to explain it away.
No. Wait a minute. No. I didn't say she had brain damage. She had a serious health episode. And my point was that from, I think it was the 7th of December in 2012 through the 7th of January of 2013, she underwent, first she had apparently a serious virus. They announced then on the 15th of December that she had at some period in the past a week fallen. She's in the hospital for 4 days. She goes home, is back in the office on the 7th. Testifies on the 25th wearing special glasses that allow her to deal with the double vision that this episode caused. My point was that Hillary Clinton wants to run for president, but she would not be human if this didn't enter in as a consideration. And my other point is this will be an issue in the 2016 race, whether she likes it or not.
Ever since he made the traumatic brain injury comment, Mr. Rove has been receiving criticism not just from Democrats. No. He's been receiving criticism from Republicans and conservative pundits as well. Folks like Mark Levin, the conservative radio host, who slammed Rove during his May 15th show, as did a number of other Republicans. Wow. I mean, think about that, folks. Just how bad or tone deaf does something have to be for a Republican to be criticized by other Republicans for being too mean to Hillary Clinton? Think about that. I mean, look, we Democrats don't like Karl Rove, right? But apart from everything else, what I find fascinating about this and the whole election night issue in 2012 with Megyn Kelly is that whether we like his position on the issues or who he supports and how he goes about all those things, his expertise, and he is an expert at it, is in controlling the message and narrative. And these two incidents, with Hillary's health and with election 2012, the coverage at night, are complete lapses in judgment concerning how they played with the public. I guess what I'm saying is, there are a lot of things that we expect from Karl Rove, and tone deafness with how something will play with the public is definitely not one of them. Playing political games like this with the status of someone's health, well, that is clearly from the reaction, and should be out of bounds. Excuse me. The point is moot anyway, right, folks? I mean, every presidential and vice presidential candidate is going to have to submit proof of what their health condition is, right? That happens every 4 years. Rove himself said as much in a latter part of the interview that I didn't play for you. So the question that I have is, what's even the point of raising it now? I mean, it was an ugly and pointless thing to say, is what I'm saying. Karl Rove is runner-up this week in our Hall of Shame for infamous nonsense. But the award for worst and most shameful nonsense of the week goes to Rush Limbaugh. Most weeks, when we talk about folks who find themselves a spot in my Hall of Shame, we talk about them doing or saying one thing that is particularly shameful, right? Just one thing. Not this week. Not with Rush Limbaugh. He makes the list this week for saying a couple of completely ridiculous and ugly statements, plural. In the first one, Limbaugh is talking about Boko Haram's kidnapping of the girls, and he criticized the hashtag, and he criticized Hillary Clinton and Michelle Obama's involvement in the effort to raise awareness of the kidnapping.
Apparently there's a Twitter, what do you call them, handle, Mrs. Obama looking sad. Is that not pathetic? What the hell message does that send? It is just unbelievable. The sad thing here is that the low information crowd that's puddling around out there on Twitter is going to think we're actually doing something about it. At least she's trying, Mr. Limbaugh. What are you doing? At least Mrs. Obama cares. At least they're trying to get them back.
And Rush, wow, I just have to take a breath after that. It's just, the types of things he says is just so nasty and ridiculous. But Rush wasn't finished there. After a commercial break, he continued on with a rant against Hillary and Michelle.
Here, which, that the hashtag politics isn't aimed at the terrorists, it's aimed at helping them. The regime, Hillary, Michelle Obama, sympathize with Boko Haram. They're blaming the Christian Nigerian government, for creating Boko Haram. And they want to get rid of the Nigerian government, because if you do that, if you appease the terror group by getting rid of the group you think is responsible for their existence, then you've made peace with them, you've made friends with them, and they'll leave us alone, or whatever convoluted thinking. I mean, I'm sorry, my ability to comprehend left or liberalism only goes so far.
I'm reminded, when I hear stuff like this, why the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party holds such crazy views. I mean, they listen to twisted analysis like this nonsense that we just heard from Rush Limbaugh on a regular basis. I mean, these folks are predisposed to not like Democrats anyway, right? Tea Partiers, the far right of the Republican Party, they're not going to like Democrats anyway. And Rush twists every issue in a way that feeds his listeners' desire for a reason to hate Democrats and liberals. I mean, that's his shtick in a nutshell. If I met somebody from outer space who wanted to understand what that guy Rush Limbaugh was, that's the sentence I would use. Now, as I hinted in my opening, this was not the only thing that Rush said this week that was particularly shameful, even for him. In case you've been living under a rock, Republicans and conservatives of all stripes have been focusing their attacks on Hillary Clinton for the past few months. We've talked about that previously just on this episode and in this Hall of Shame. You know, Benghazi's just one example of that, because, you know, they're doing all this because they're afraid of her candidacy in 2016, and they should be. It's going to be all anti-Hillary all the time for the next 2.5 years from Republicans, and quite frankly, past that if she gets elected. So Limbaugh had devoted a whole long segment of his show to attacking Hillary and her credentials, and then made one of the most sexist and misogynist statements I have heard from him since his attacks on Sandra Fluke. Now, I was going to play the clip, but I figured I tortured you all enough with the noxious sound of Rush's voice earlier in this segment. So I'm just going to tell you. He literally said, quote, "Hillary's only and greatest achievement is being female." Now, I didn't think anything that Rush said about women could surprise me anymore, right? Certainly, I thought nothing that he could say about Hillary could surprise me. I mean, he obviously hates women a lot, and he obviously hates Bill and Hillary Clinton a lot, so I didn't think he could surprise me anymore, but he surprised me with that one. Before her 20s were over, Hillary was accepted to, and graduated from Yale Law School, served as a staff attorney to the Children's Defense Fund, was a member of the President Nixon impeachment inquiry staff, and taught law at the University of Arkansas. Again, that was before her 20s were over. And there's still a lot to talk about between those times in her life and the fact that she was elected senator and served as Secretary of State of the United States. But no, Limbaugh discounts and dismisses everything she's accomplished and says her only and greatest achievement is being female. Now, at this point, folks, I think the only thing to do is play a snippet from The Daily Show where Jon Stewart takes Limbaugh to task for some of the things that he said this week.
Rush, the quivering rage heap, who is apparently desperately trying to extinguish any remaining molecule of humanity that might still reside in the Chernobyl-esque Superfund cleanup site, that was his soul. Find you in there. Who should we go with? Who should we choose? Well, I don't know. Why don't we tweet our votes to hashtag you, Rush?
Well, there you have it. Couldn't say it any better than myself, and that's why I didn't try. So tweet your opinion of Rush to hashtag FURush, where you replace F, of course, with that most wonderful of vulgarisms that begins with F and rhymes with duck. Rush Limbaugh wins the award for worst and most shameful nonsense of the week. That's all I have for today's show. Thank you for listening. The next episode of Making Sense with Steve Laser will air live at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio this Sunday, May 25th, and Monday, May 26th at 2 p.m. Pacific Time on KCAA Radio, 1050 a.m. in Inland Empire, California. Be sure to follow me and the show on Twitter at Stephen Laser, on Facebook at Making Sense with Steve Laser, and on my blog at stevelaser.blogspot.com. Until next time, have a great rest of your day and a great week.